This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. In 1944, a polio outbreak swept across parts of North Carolina. The hospital in Charlotte quickly filled up, and that left a lot of people in neighboring Hickory without any treatment. Well, they needed facilities, so the people of Hickory banded together, and they assembled an emergency hospital in just over 2 days. And that event came to be known as the Miracle of Hickory. Writer Diane Chamberlain reimagines the miracle of Hickory in her new novel. It tells the story of a young nurse who feels isolated in the town but finds strength through her work in the hospital. The book is called The Stolen Marriage. Diane Chamberlain joins me now on The State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Frank. I'm so pleased to be here.
Happy to have you. And I do want to talk about your novel, but I want to hear more for the moment on the miracle of Hickory. Tell us more about that.
Well, as you mentioned, in 1944, right around D-Day, a case of polio erupted in Hickory, and within 24 hours, there were 68 more cases in the region around Hickory, and the Charlotte Hospital was full to capacity. They had kids out on the lawn, and so somebody had to do something, and these three physicians got together and tried to find a place where they could build a hospital. And there was a fresh air camp for underprivileged kids in Hickory. All it was a stone building, lakeside. And they decided that that's where they would put it. They held a town meeting, a gigantic town meeting, where everybody came. The white folks were on the floor of the high school auditorium and the black folks in the balcony. And these three physicians presented the problem, the breadth of the problem, and what they saw as a solution, which was building a hospital from the ground up, outfitting it with physicians and nurses. The physicians were provided by March of Dimes, and the nurses by the National Foundation for Polio.
Mm-hmm.
And then they called on all of the community to volunteer to help build, to deliver hot plates and linens, and for the women in the community to sew gowns and hats for the staff and for the children. So everybody pitched in.
And in just over 2 days, the project was finished.
In 54 hours, they had their first patients. And the other thing that's very interesting to me about that is that most of the men were the able-bodied men were overseas fighting. So it was older men who were doing the building. It was inmates who were supervised and who came from prisons and were digging trenches for water lines, and women who were doing the work.
So tell us how that story led to your novel. Was it knowing that story that led to the novel? Or?
Yes, I had that story in my mind for many years. I knew I wanted to do something with it. But I had to figure out who's going to tell this story. And I like to have intrigue and suspense in my novels. And I like to have characters who are going to suffer and then triumph. So I came up with a young woman named Tess DeMello, who lives in Little Italy in Baltimore, which sounds odd since we're talking about Hickory. But I wanted, for when she comes to Hickory, I wanted her to be a fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I gave her this very sheltered life, with only surrounded by Italian Catholics in the 40s. And what happens with Tess is that she is engaged to the boy next door who she has known forever, and it's a wonderful love story, and she's a nurse and he's a doctor, and their future is planned. But one night she goes to Washington, D.C. with a girlfriend. She drinks for the first time, and there is a man in the boarding house where she's staying. His name is Henry Kraft, and she ends up having sex with Henry. It's not exactly against her will, but she is inebriated. And she gets pregnant. And she's horrified. She's so ashamed of herself. And she doesn't feel that she can tell her fiancé what she's done. They've been saving themselves for marriage. So she decides that she is going to have to move away, raise this baby on her own, tell neighbors that her husband is overseas, that sort of thing. So she needs money to do this. And she knows that Henry, the man who impregnated her, is the owner of a furniture factory in Hickory, North Carolina. So she will go to him and ask for money to raise this child. And she takes the overnight train from Washington, D.C. to Hickory and finds him and explains the problem. And he says, we need to get married. So she's marrying a complete stranger. She's moving to a town where she knows nobody. And what she discovers very quickly is that everyone seems to dislike her. They have to move in temporarily with Henry's mother, Ruth, and sister, Lucy, into a mansion. So they really come from money, and they look down on this Italian gold digger.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's interesting because at this point now you've really set up a kind of double isolation. I mean, not only is she, isolated as the other, right? She's she's a Catholic. She's an Italian. You know, go home. But also, as you point out, she came from Little Italy, where everything was just fine. So there was never an other. There were no others. There was no such thing as other.
That is true.
Now, not only is there another, I'm it.
That's very true. And she has never known a black person. Hmm. So suddenly she has a housekeeper who is black, and she has other people in the community who are black. And it's very different for her. Henry has a good friend who left North Carolina to marry his black fiance because it was illegal in North Carolina. And then they moved back to North Carolina and tried to live there, and then were prosecuted because it was illegal. And I had to decide how Tess would feel about something like that. Henry is very supportive of his friend and feels that this is wrong, that they shouldn't be, that they should be allowed to live in an interracial marriage. But how would Tess feel about that? And it was really hard for me as somebody in the 21st century to make her say this, but she says that she thinks it's wrong, that it's a mistake for these two people to be married. And there are a lot of situations like that where I really had to look at Tess in 1944 and think of how she would feel about things.
I wonder if I could ask you to read for us.
Sure. I'm going to read just a little section that is when Tess first meets Ruth, who is Henry's mother, and who is obviously not happy about her being there. And they're in Henry's house with Ruth. And Ruth is telling her, oh, you can join our bridge club and our book club. She's telling her all these wonderful things that Tess can get involved in. And she says that she would like Tess to join her Ladies of the Home Front organization. So here's where I'll start reading. What is Ladies of the Home Front? I asked. It's not a group so much as a movement, Ruth explained, leaning forward with some enthusiasm. Another woman and I became concerned with what's happening to the women in our country while their men are away fighting. They're wearing slacks, smoking to excess. You don't smoke, do you, dear? Occasionally, I smiled apologetically, thinking of how much I'd like a cigarette at that very moment. So unfeminine, Ruth appeared to shudder. I worry the men will come home to a country full of manly women. I do hope you'll come to our meetings. I'll introduce you around. And then there's our wonderful church and all the activities there. You're Baptist, of course. She looked at me as though the answer were a foregone conclusion. I shook my head. Catholic, I said. And her eyes widened before she had the chance to catch herself. Well, she said, apparently shaken by my answer, you're Baptist now, dear.
Diane Chamberlain reading from her new book, The Stolen Marriage. Diane reads Thursday at Page 158 Books in Wake Forest, and then on Saturday at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh, lots of other places across the state as well. And you can find them at our website, stateofthings.org. So here, really, you do introduce some of the complexity of this question of belonging. Well, maybe if you join our clubs, then you can be one of us. But, of course, you can almost sense the discomfort that poor Tess is sensing now. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to fit in, even if I join your club. And yet, when it comes to the other for Tess, African Americans, this is there's no bond here. The other is not a thing in and of itself, right? Being the outcast, you're your own outcast. You're your own particular individual.
Well, the interesting thing is that Tess begins to find that Hattie, the maid in the house, is the one person that she can connect to because they're both others.
Right. So tell us more about how this developed, because, again, you were first attracted to this amazing story, The Miracle of Hickory. But tell us now how this plot unfolded for you as a writer and how all of these themes as well became important to you.
Well, I knew that that I wanted Tess to, as I say, be a fish out of water. And I wanted to see her growth over time. But I also needed to add that element of mystery that I love. And so Henry is the element of mystery. Henry is a very peculiar fella. They never again make love. And she, you know, on their wedding night, she's very nervous about sleeping with him. And when she goes to bed with him, he says, "Do you have a book with you to read?" And they read for a half hour and then it's lights out. So she is perplexed. And then she discovers that Henry hides money. Even though he's very wealthy, she finds a cache of thousands of dollars that he has hidden. And then sometimes he just never comes home at night. So there are all kinds of things, all kinds of mysterious goings on with Henry that she doesn't understand.
And tell us how The Miracle of Hickory, this the polio outbreak, figures into the book.
Yes, well, she has a nursing background. She's actually a very new nurse. And when she learns about The Miracle of Hickory, she knows she's needed there. But Henry is adamant that she not work at the hospital. He doesn't want her to work at all, but certainly not doing something as horrible as working with these people with all the polio germs. However, she pushes and pushes unsuccessfully at first. He says you can go pick up donations from people in the community. So she's picking up donations from people in the community, and the hospital is just in the process of being built then. And she delivers some of the donations to the hospital, and Henry is there working on the building. And when she is there, a pickup truck comes pulling into the clearing, and it's a husband and wife and their young son, and they're panicking because they think the young son has polio. And there are no doctors and nurses there yet. So Tess climbs into the pickup truck and evaluates the child and determines that the child does not have polio. But Henry has witnessed all of this, and he is not a bad person. And he recognizes both that she needs this and that the hospital is going to need her input.
Can I ask you to read another passage?
Sure. This is when Tess first arrives at the new hospital. It's before any of the patients have come, and they're just getting things ready. And she is still feeling ostracized by the community. "We made all the beds, filled jars with alcohol for the thermometers, and prepared a giant vat of disinfectant where we would empty all patient waste to prevent the spread of disease. And then we began what turned out to be the most arduous task of the morning, cutting lengths of wool from donated blankets to be used in something called the Sister Kenny Method. A volunteer physiotherapist explained the approach to us. When a patient with paralysis arrived, we would further cut the wool to precise measurements for his or for her affected limbs. Then, at least a couple of times a day, we'd boil the pieces of wool, run them through a wringer, and wrap them around those paralyzed arms or legs. Once the hot packs were removed, we'd exercise the limbs to keep the muscles from atrophying. In the three polio cases I'd seen as a student nurse, we'd immobilize the affected limbs with splints and, in one case, a cast. Suddenly, that approach was viewed with disfavor, and this new, incredibly labor-intensive treatment was what we'd be using. It made sense in theory to me, but after only 30 minutes of cutting lengths of wool, my hand was cramping up. I didn't really care. For the first time since nursing school, I felt myself a part of something important, No one treated me as an outsider here. No one treated me as Henry Kraft's wife. I was just a nurse. I was happily one of them.
Diane Chamberlain reading from her new novel, The Stolen Marriage. She'll be reading Thursday at Page 158 Books in Wake Forest. She's going to be at McIntyre Books in Pittsburgh on Saturday and several places around the state. And, of course, we have it at her website. So this immersion into the grief and suffering of others is a way in which Tess finds some kind of fulfillment. Did you know that going in was that, because you talked about you wanted to test, you're going to throw her in a rough environment and watch how she dealt with it. Was this something that you knew? Was this going to be part of it right from the beginning, that she'd be immersed in the suffering?
I knew that would be part of it, but there's so much that I didn't know. I always outline, but as soon as the characters start talking from page one, I might as well throw my outline away. And there's so many surprises to me as I was writing the book. Tess learns how to use the iron lung, which I never expected when I was writing it. And then something amazing happens with the iron lung. So I love to surprise my readers. And if they're surprised, usually it's something that surprised me as well.
Diane Chamberlain's new novel is called The Stolen Marriage. It tells the story of a young woman in Hickory during the polio outbreak in 1944. Diane, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Diane is going to be reading Thursday at Page 158 Books in Wake Forest. She'll be at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh on Saturday. And if you want to check our website, you can find out where else to meet Diane Chamberlain across the state. Our website is stateofthings.org. And our program is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.